On this April Fool's Day, we ask, what does it take to be funny? It's an age-old question that has been studied by scholars and stand-up comedians. What does it take to make someone laugh? And why, for some, is it easy to tell a joke, and for others, and by others I mean me, is it just so hard? I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today on the show we have two funny people who will take us through their process for getting a giggle, a laugh, or a guffaw out of an audience. Comedians Bob Marley and Rachel Flehinger. And I'll ask them to share their favorite joke and how they go about figuring out what's good comedy and what crosses the line into poor taste. Next on Main Calling, a radio host and two comedians walk into a bar searching for a punchline. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Main Calling. Did you hear the one about the two comedians who walked into a radio studio and tried to make Main laugh? Well, if anybody is able to make a joke out of that horrible opening line written by our producer, Jonathan Smith, or is able to make a public radio audience laugh, it is my two guests today in the studio with me, Rachel Flehinger. She is an improv comedian and a morning show personality on country music station WPOR. Also with me today, Bob Marley. He is well known in both Maine and nationally. He has appeared on The David Letterman Show, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and on Comedy Central. But first, I would like you to share your favorite clean joke with us or share what you think makes something funny. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Main Calling, or post to the Main Calling Facebook page. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Wow, thank you. There's a lot of different ways we could have reached you, apparently.
Yeah, thanks for having us. There are a lot of ways.
Thank you.
And so I want to get into a serious discussion about what makes something funny. But first, I've got to ask you guys about your names. So what is it, Bob? I've wanted to, all the years I've known you, why did your parents name you after a reggae singer?
I don't know. And you know what's weird is, like, I've been doing stand-up now 23 years, and I've never gone to that well about doing jokes about my name. But my wife and I were recently in Jamaica in January, and it's unavoidable when you – it's an all-inclusive resort. So when you announce – you have to announce your name at every – when you sign in for dinner. And when you say, my name's Bob Marley, they're like, okay, right, whatever. And they go, room number, I'm like 526, and they look it up, like, oh, my God. So – yeah, it's they had no idea. My you know, my parents are Irish and old. They were, you know, they weren't hip.
Are you feeling any pressure now, though, with the legalization pending?
Yeah, the legalization.
You're going to have to partake in things. And
that's an interesting topic here in Portland, the legalization or the attempted legalization of marijuana. And the ruling says that you can possess it, but you can't buy it, sell it, or smoke it.
No.
And I can't think of a law any more confusing for people that actually do smoke marijuana.
Yeah. Wait, man, you're saying, so what you're saying is, I can hold it but not hold it,
right.
But if I drop it, don't pick it up.
Right.
But if I find it, I can tell somebody about it, but they can't also touch it.
That's right.
Sweet.
Wow. Yeah. So, Rachel, what about your name? And I have to apologize. In the promo for the show, I pronounced it incorrectly. Say it for me. And is there
you said it correctly. It's a German. Okay, so I'm a German Jew, New York Jew in Maine. Hello.
Right.
There's one of me. So it's Flehinger is the German pronunciation. And anybody from this town in Germany, Flehingen, was a Flehinger.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm from this town that no longer exists because, you know, it was destroyed during the war. This is funny.
So everybody in the
Holocaust, go.
But everybody in the town was of that name.
Yes, Flehinger.
Wow.
Flehinger.
Imagine if we had that in Maine. Everybody was Buxtonians.
Well,
what's your name, Buxton?
Well, there are a lot of Buxtons.
I love Buxton.
You joke. I dated a guy from Fort Kent who was a Terrio, and he was like, oh, which? And everybody was like, which Terrio?
Yeah, which one?
Which, yo, Jake? Oh, I know Jake Terrio. He's his nephew's son, cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, everybody knows everybody.
23 years of doing stand-up, Bob. Yeah. How do you keep coming up with things to talk about?
Well, my mantra is, as long as I have problems, I have jokes, and I have a lot of problems. Like, every time you turn around, there's something. Like, just living in Maine, like, you know, the misery of Maine life, there's such a camaraderie with all of us. That's always a good well to go to. You know, like, the weather report just before we came on air, 39 to 46. And we were actually like, oh, wow.
Wow, awesome.
46.
You did a fist pump.
Last Saturday was 41 degrees, and it was like a regal. People were like, oh, bring me to the river and baptize me. Yeah. It's 41.
I know. I cleaned out my garage.
Well, I wore a skirt, and my skin was actually transparent. People were actually taking my pulse by looking at my veins and my legs.
It's unbelievable. I mean, like, if you called somebody in California or Florida with glee in your voice, and you said, guess what?
It's 41.
They would have you committed.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys have a suggestion of what I can do for my brother who lives in Atlanta and just texted me a picture of a magnolia blooming. What would be an appropriate text and response?
Well, here's the thing. Those snowbirds, or if you will, and he's there full time, but we have a lot of those people from Maine that go to Florida, that go south, and their only mission is to call us every day with the temperature.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievably annoying. My aunt, hi, Bobby. It's Aunt Teresa. It's 87. I'm like, okay, well, I've got shoveling to do.
Yeah.
I just snapped my second and third vertebrae, and I can tie my shoes without bending over now.
I know. My answer to you is don't text him back. Text his neighbors and tell them to lock him in a lock-in in a freezer.
Okay,
like,
that's
good. 2 hours.
Or, you know, he's in Atlanta, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, how did they handle those people? As much as I wanted to feel bad for those people during their inclement weather, maybe 3 weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was, where all the vehicles just stopped on the highway.
The vortex.
Yeah.
The polar vortex.
They all just stopped on the highway, like a scene from The Walking Dead. And they're like, we ain't getting out of the car. We're not moving.
Uh-huh.
Like, just to be a fly on the wall on the inside of the vehicle to hear those, don't get out the car, Junior. We don't know what that white stuff is. It was an inch and a half of snow.
I know.
An inch and a half. I mean, did you hammer him when he got the snow? He's used to it, though, because he...
Yeah, I know. He's just mean. No, he's not mean. He's funny. So anyway, so Bob, you come up with your ideas from your problems. And Rachel, I'm guessing that the news helps you. And one thing I was thinking of when I read the newspaper this morning, that a man was arrested or has... I guess, sentenced today for growing pot at the Augusta airport inside the fence. And I'm guessing that's the kind of thing you riff on?
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens when like on my radio show, we talk about that. And, you know, there are a lot of times as a homeowner, I envy the airport and all the green. And I understand looking at that lawn and going, that's potential.
Right.
You know what I mean? I go, oh, that's carrots.
Apparently, he said he thought it would be safer there. And not get stolen.
See, that makes sense.
And how much
was
it?
That's a lot of security.
I don't remember. I don't remember from the article.
See, to me, it's so much work to smoke marijuana. I don't personally do it. It's like you have to have a guy who has a friend who lives in Lewiston. You have to go up there with unmarked ones. You're counting stuff. People are weighing stuff. I mean, it's so much effort to do that.
Why do you hate Biddeford so much?
I love Biddeford.
Come on.
Tell us what
Biddeford's
other
too.
Biddeford, I call it Lewiston by the sea.
I know.
Do you know how you know it's spring in Biddeford? And the phones are going to ring. They have the maple buckets hanging on the telephone poles. I'm not getting anything out of this one. Give us a call now,
okay,
folks.
On that note, I think we will take a call. Paul in Pittsfield, you've been so patient. Why don't you join in?
Hey, no problem. Thanks very much. I just saw an image of a maple bucket hanging on a utility pole.
Nice.
It was almost full.
Yeah.
My favorite joke, and it's clean.
Good.
What's the difference between death and marriage?
What?
When you're dead, you're never going to wish you were married.
Thank you for opening up our listener calls, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm going to die alone. I don't relate to
you. You know, that's the thing with comedy. That's a good, clean joke. Like, people don't realize how hard it is to, like, go on the radio or go on TV and be completely clean and still make people laugh, you know, because it's disarming, you know? When you're in a nightclub and people are drinking and whooping it up, you know, it's easier. And some communities are even easier. I love Sanford. I went 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've been to the Comedy Barn.
Oh, yeah. I've had the pleasure.
So the C and the B have fallen off the building, and it just says Omedy Arn. And so I'm on stage there, and it looks like a place where Patrick Swayze would be a bouncer. you know, like Roadhouse. And so I'm on stage and a woman is approaching the stage and she's yelling at me. She's like, you're not even from Maine. And I'm like, no, I flew in for this event.
To the Amity Arn.
Of course, of course I live here. Who would take this gig that doesn't live here? I'm like, there's no comedian in New York going, should I work Vegas or Tahoe? No, get me the people from the Amity Arn on the phone. I'd like to speak to those guys. Yeah.
Well, I was doing some research this morning, and I read one of the elements among people who research humor is that things have to be a little bit mean to be funny. You think that's true?
I don't think that's true. I think it can be, you know, there's Chelsea Handler. She's leaving her show. She makes a career out of being really mean to people. And I got to say, and this is kind of serious, as a woman, I think it's a little bit of, I just think it's more important to be lifting people up. And I think that you can make fun with people. I don't think you have to be making fun of them.
But does there have to be an edginess for it to be funny?
There's got to be some. There has to be some
edge. There's got to be a twist.
I mean, I'll make fun of myself a ton.
Yeah.
My family a ton. And then, you know, sometimes you'll go cross the line, not on purpose, but you'll do it. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize that might have upset somebody. And in this day and age, you will get emails. And people will inform you.
Well, I saw on your, right on the WPOR website, people were giving you a hard time. How do you take that, Rachel?
I think that if I'm not stating my opinions and being honest, then I can't be funny. And if I'm really so worried that my opinions are going to offend anybody, then I have to stop. But, you know, in the end of the day, what I hope people are doing are laughing with me. I'm not laughing at someone. I'm laughing with them at ridiculous situations. I'm not saying, you know.
It's polarizing for sure. I mean, but you're absolutely right. You have to say you got to do what you do. You know, it's subjective. It's so subjective. It doesn't, you know, some people will listen to one. I did a joke about potato chips and I got an email.
Right.
Are you serious?
What's your beef about potato chips?
My family owned
chip factory and they like Ruffles. And I was like, oh my gosh, here we go.
Well, how do you know? How do you sense what crosses the line into, say, bad taste? Or do you just not worry about it and let the chips fall where they will?
There are people who make whole careers on bad taste. I mean, you know, I think that that's, like Bob says, it's a very, very subjective thing. And if you say something and yourself, you kind of, your muscles like contract a little, like, here we go, I'm saying it.
Yeah.
That's the line.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me.
When I first started out, I think it's a skill set too. Like the longer you do it, the better you get at it. So the less you have to go to the lower brow well. You know, and so you'll get better at delivering cleaner or you non-offensive stuff. You know what I mean? It gets a little easier, but you're still going to make people mad. I had a joke recently because I had to go to Walmart to get de-icer because my wife had, it was minus 26 degrees 3 weeks ago. And I love my wife, but she had washed the car and then called me from the driveway saying, she goes, I can't get out of the car.
Why did she wash the car?
I don't know. I'm not an intelligent man. I know a few things. Like, you know, never take... Here's one thing I know.
Did she grow up in Maine?
Yes.
Oh.
In Lewiston. Yeah. In Lewiston.
Right.
But here's a few things that I know. Like, don't take a suppository and a sleeping pill in the same night. That's something I know. There's something else I know. Don't wash the car if it's minus 26.
See, and now that some people might be... That was a poop joke.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Let's call it out.
You know what? I have children, so it's just sort of par for the course. Yeah,
but some people might be listening like, oh, he referred to poop.
Why did you do that?
I'm so offended.
Well, so I went to Walmart to get the de-icer, and I made a simple observation. I was like, you know, is it just me or is everybody that work at Walmart recently had an injury of some sort? And so... I said there was a guy with a cast, which there was. There was an employee with a cast.
Yeah.
And there's another guy with an eye patch. I said, what is the deal with the guy with the eye patch? And they said, company picnic. He got hit in the eye with a dart. And I was like, okay. So I brought that up on stage, and I had people emailing me saying, you're making fun of people with disabilities. And I'm like, no, you missed the joke. The joke is injuries. It was a legitimate injury. Because I said, is there a fight club in the break room? What's going on over there?
When I moved to Maine, and this is real, I moved here from New York City. The man who sold guns at the Walmart has one arm.
You're
And the irony, I couldn't not. Right. You know what I mean? And being from New York City.
Well, this is a point I wanted to get to. So you're bringing it up on your own, Rachel. You moved here from New York City to Maine. Is there a difference between a Maine sense of humor and everywhere else?
I should probably know that. But the truth is, funny's funny. I mean, and in the end of the day, maybe I'm a little bit edgier and I talk a little bit faster and I'm maybe refer to more ethnic stuff. It's definitely more white here than it is in New York. But no, I think funny's funny.
When I travel, because that's a question all the time, how do you go anywhere except Maine? Because your whole act is about Maine, which is completely not true.
Right.
I'm from here. I'm always in the marketplace. I live here. So people are like, no, you're a Maine humorist, which I'm not. You know, I do jokes about Maine. But when I go on the road, I just, you know, talk about my family or whatever. If I go to Florida, I'll spend 20 minutes just giving them such a hard time about living in warm weather. And they love it because it comes with so much sarcasm, you know. And I'm on stage and I clearly look miserable to them. So they're like, look at this guy. You know, I tell them, like, my toenails are falling off and I have, you know, lines on my shins from my tube socks. My legs are milky white. You know, I barely made it through the winter, you know. Yeah. So I just flip it on them. But I think what people like about Maine comedy, people from New England, they like the sarcasm. They like the dryness of it.
Yeah.
They
love misery.
Yeah, they love the miserable attitude, you know.
We're hardy. I mean, you know, I've lived here. I'll get in trouble for claiming we when I've only lived here for 11 years. Yeah. But we lived through some winters and hard times, and I drink a lot of alcohol here.
Yeah.
I drink a lot more than I did before.
So quickly before I go to break, I want to ask you for some advice. There's so many people out there who were not born with the funny bone that you guys were, and maybe have to give public presentations, and their bosses said, oh, start with a joke. What advice do you have for someone who just wants to get a couple jokes out that are decent?
My advice would be, if you have a public speaking engagement, point out something humorous about your own physical appearance or do a joke about yourself. Don't go after anybody. I've done corporate events. Mm-hmm. I did a corporate event like 2 years into my career, and this guy came up to me and said, don't forget, talk about Bill and Sally at last year's Christmas party. It's hilarious. So I was blinded. I had no idea. And how I'm doing like 10 minutes in and things are going great. And I'm like, hey, what about Bill and Sally at last year's Christmas party? And I'm like, I hadn't realized that they were together, but they were there that night with their spouses. And so I was like, okay, maybe I don't involve the audience next time.
Right.
In corporate environments where people know each other. So if you have to give a public speaking event, make fun of yourself.
I actually teach this. I have a business where I teach improv for corporate and this kind of thing. And same thing, make fun of yourself, make fun of the industry, something that is miserable that you all share about the industry, you know, like, okay, we're in this together kind of thing so that you get people on your side.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments, jokes, and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do RM Davis, Inc., providing investment management, trust services, and financial counsel to generations of clients throughout New England, rmdavis.com, and Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, committed to canning their entire line to protect the beer and the environment, baxterbrewing.com.
What do we mean when we call someone successful?
I run, jump, walk, season of the audience 26 and a half miles on average on that day alone. So I do ultra marathons in a weekend physically. Everybody has days where they come to the end of the day. I come to the end of the day bone tired and victorious.
I'm Guy Raz. Success is a misnomer. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Hey, this is Peter Sagal at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So we were working on our special fundraiser edition for MPBN, you know, the one with 10 minutes of recycled content and 40 minutes of begging. And then we got a call from MPBN. They said, hey, don't bother doing that fundraising edition. We're going to get all our fundraising done on one day, Thursday, so we can run your show, Wait, Wait, uninterrupted on Saturday. I'm like, yeah, right. That'd be nice. Well, look, they are going to need a lot of help to make this work. So everybody, please, please tune in and pledge during the MPBN Super Thursday one-day drive this Thursday. Because listen, if we get to Saturday and we got to do some begging, we got nothing prepared.
And you can take your opportunity to support public radio Thursday, April 3rd.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Making People Laugh, Bob Marley and Rachel Fleihinger, two funny Mainers. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to an email from Amy. I don't know what town she lives in. She says she's enjoying the laugh so far. This is the only joke I've ever been able to remember because it's so short and appropriate for Easter season. What do you get when you pour boiling water down a rabbit hole?
I don't know.
Hot cross bunnies. So there you go. Yeah, again, a little something.
It's punny.
Perverse about it. Yeah, so So
it works.
Gwen, Camden, go ahead.
Yeah, there's this guy who lived on the edge of the New Hampshire-Maine border. He lived in Maine, actually. And he had a knock on the door one day, and he opened the door, and there was this guy there, kind of official-looking, maybe a sheriff or a town officer. And the guy said, "I have some news for you." And the homeowner said, "What's that?" And the guy said, "We've just redrawn the line between Maine and New Hampshire, and you no longer live in Maine. You now live in New Hampshire." And the guy said, "Oh, thank God, I couldn't live through another Maine winter."
That's a good one.
Thanks, Gwen, for calling in with that one. I wanted to ask you before the break and forgot, what is the difference? You do stand-up, Bob, and you do improv, Rachel. Mm-hmm. What is the difference exactly? You come mm-hmm. to a stage and you don't have a list prepared.
No, we do, if you're familiar with the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? I am part of a group called Running with Scissors, and we do games where we get suggestions from the audience, and then we do whole comic scenes and or games with gags based on the suggestions from the audience. So we do totally without a net. We have
which
no
is
idea.
Very brave. Like, I have to have ammunition. I pre-write it. It's prepped. It's all set up. I go up. I just stand and deliver. I like for me to do that without a tightrope. I mean, I could do it because I perform a lot.
Right.
But I would not be comfortable. It's a different skill set. I'm very envious of those people.
And I'll tell you what's also very different are the audiences. Yeah. Audiences, when you're doing stand-up, because I've done stand-up, they're sitting there like, "All right, make me laugh. Do it. You wrote these jokes. They better be funny." But with improv, they're like, "You don't even know what you're doing.
Right.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you thought of that." And they're very forgiving and kind.
I mean, I could work the crowd. Like, we did a high school project graduation in Bath the other night, and I worked the crowd for like 20 minutes right off the top. Mm-hmm. But that I'm controlling it. Like,
right.
I couldn't do improv. It's a different skill set.
So are there not hecklers as much in improv as Bob will get?
There are tons of hecklers because you're asking them to participate, yeah. And then they don't get that they're not actually part of the show. Like, you know.
Oh.
Right. So then, but the freedom with improv is, and I'm the rudest out of our group. I just tell, I'm like, shut up.
Just be quiet, yeah.
Yeah. But also, with improv, you can sort of, they become the running joke of the whole show. We'll just,
It's always nice to be able to tell the hecklers, like, "Listen, I have a plan for you. You can do your jokes on the way home in the car."
Right.
So your friends can hear them. Yeah. And then I'll do mine now, and then you'll get the best of both worlds.
Right. Or we just say, "Oh, what's your name?" And then we start turning to them for, "All right, what do you have to say now?"
Yeah.
"Okay, your turn, Joe."
But I generally don't pay attention to them because it's, they'll chirp a little bit and then they kind of just quiet down.
Yeah.
Usually,
I'm going to go to Paul in Bath. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks. This is for Rachel, actually.
Hi.
Hello, Bob. I love your stuff, Bob. I've seen you a couple times.
Thank you, man.
Rachel, you mentioned earlier that you are the only German Jew in Maine, but actually I just was calling to get some solidarity with you.
Solidarity.
Yes,
let's eat some schnitzel together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my father was born in Hamburg, and I was raised Jewish, and there's not a lot of material I think you can get out of that.
Though. Yeah, what are you doing? What are you doing here? Are you a native Mainer?
I ask myself that question almost every day.
March and April is a good time to ask yourself that question.
No, I'm a transplant like most.
Yeah.
All
right.
Well, Paul, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
It has just dragged this winter. My wife came in
so
3 weeks ago with the last storm. We got the big one. She's like, "I just saw on the news that roofs are caving in all around the state. So don't you think you ought to get up there, Bob, and shovel the roof off?" I was like, "Yeah. Don't you think you ought to clean the oven while it's running? I'm not getting on the roof. Look at me. Does this look like a roof body to you? It's unbelievable.
Listen, I have a theory that maybe the roofs are caving in because people are climbing up on them.
That could be.
Stay off the roof.
Right?
Just saying.
Bob, what I want to know is if your wife knew what she was getting in for.
Yeah.
She, here's the deal. People always say, because I make fun of my wife and my mother a lot, and I love them both very much. My wife totally knows what the deal is. She'll laugh and go, not true. Not true. Kind of true. Pretty much true.
You know, like a gauge.
Yeah. So she's okay with it.
Well, your poor mom, I still think of her whenever I pull my sweater down in the back.
Well, my mom's getting older now, so I'm responsible for her doctor's appointments, and which is interesting. I brought her for the colonoscopy, which was very uncomfortable. We went into the...
in more ways than one.
Yeah, we went into the thing, and they do like 80 a day, like Jiffy Lube or something. Maybe that's not a good analogy.
It's a great analogy.
They just close the curtain, and they're like, we're trying on jeans at the Gap, and it's me and my mother and the doctor, and this is like a source of material. And the doctor looked at me and said, now, Bob, do you want to stay for the procedure? I'm like, well, no. I'm like, that's my mother. Not only I'm not going to be here, and I'm not even going to be in the waiting room. I'm going to be in my pickup truck driving down the road going, la, 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 la. Trying to forget you just asked me that. I want nothing to do with it.
But keep the pictures.
Yeah.
And Rachel, your mom's here in Maine too, right?
Yeah. My mom just passed away last week.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It was, I was also in charge of, it's okay. It's okay. There's a lot of material that comes out of being in charge of parents' health and their well-being. Like, my mom became kosher.
Right.
But in like her, she had cancer. She became kosher. All of a sudden, she was like, I'm not doing shrimp. I was like, all my life we had, I don't know, I'm not doing shrimp. I feel a connection, and I can't do shrimp and so I'm going to say it. I'm in Maine. I'm not doing lobster.
Right.
You're not doing lobster, really? Right. All right. We're kosher now.
I love the accent.
Did you put her in your comedy, and was she okay with that if you did?
Well, she, because I don't have material, what would happen is she would come to my shows, and then somebody, the suggestions from the audience would start to get the term is blue, right? So these dirty words that they want us to incorporate, and I would just shame people. My mom is right there. My mom has cancer, and she's sitting right there. That's the word you used? And my mom's dying, you know?
Yeah.
But, literally. No, she was sick, but.
Yeah.
Good. We'll go to Jackie in Yarmouth. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. Oh, hi, Jackie.
Hey, you guys are so funny. So I'm listening to, and I had this idea 20 years ago. I wish I could turn on the radio and listen to comedy and just have a you know.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
So great. And I thought, Rachel, you mentioned something about the radio.
I'm on the radio in the mornings.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I'm German. I married a Jew. There's a bunch of us here. You're not alone.
What is going on? I need to know about these people.
Send your pledges.
She's having a horrible time. She's such a New Yorker. I mean, she's not. Everyone hates her.
I'm telling you, we're a little bit much sometimes just because we interrupt people when they're talking.
There's no filter.
Right.
You know, it's like you need to filter in Maine. But anyways, comedy radio, somebody do it already. You know?
Satellite does it.
Yeah.
But it puts me out of a job, so don't listen to
that. But New Yorkers are productive, right? They're productive.
Yeah.
Maine people are like, well, yeah, it's like, you know, get to the point. My mother's in that situation where she doesn't get to the point. She's telling me a story last week. She goes, oh, last Friday, maybe it was Thursday. No, it was Friday because I got my hair done. Or it could have been Tuesday. And in my head, I'm going, it doesn't matter.
I'm not fact-checking, Mom.
Unless we're conducting a homicide investigation, it doesn't matter.
And I'm the opposite because people won't do business with me. I'll say, hey, do you know what time that the train leaves? And they'll look at me and I'll go, I'm sorry, how are you? And they'll say, I'm fine.
Yeah.
4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I like that. I like that. Jackie, thanks for calling. Nice to hear your voice. Going to David in Camden. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Bob, I've met with you once before. I'm with Bert and I.
Oh, how are you, buddy?
Good. They haven't been around for a while, but we're trying to find a new Bert and I. So we're searching for the new Bert and I now.
Oh, wow.
One thing I wanted you guys to add, because you talked about improv and comedy, but how about humor?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference with the stuff that Bob and Marshall did and the stuff that maybe Tim does. And there's still room for humor in this whole mix of laughter.
When you say humor, you mean storytelling, really?
Storytelling that sometimes you miss the point, sometimes it goes over your head, then you catch it a little later. It's not a belly laugh as much as I recognize that. It sort of touches home. Here in Maine, as Marshall said, it is that the humor in Maine is laughing at adversity. We have to deal with wicked winters, black flies, mosquitoes, mud, and there's usually, you know, it's done with a bit of sarcasm, a bit of humor.
Yeah,
not necessarily a joke, but
it's a different pace, and Tim Sample's great. I love him. He's a great guy. When I first started doing stand up, I purposely didn't listen to any of his stuff because I knew he was the guy that was here, and I didn't want to. Not that I didn't like what he did, but I didn't want to do what he did. So mine's a nightclub comedy pace. And Tim is much more, like he mentioned, a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And they're both good, and they're both different audiences. And but there's room for all of it. It's all about Maine. It's great, you know?
Yeah, if you're laughing at a story, it's great. Humorists, and I think that's, you know, what we're talking about. Humorists take you on a journey, right? They're telling the whole story. They paint a picture that is with more words. It's not set up punchline. Which is a stand-up is set up punchline, and then improv is a scene built around ridiculousness. So there's that. But a humorist will take you on a whole descriptive journey, almost like a writer would.
Do you think there's a lot of pressure though, as a comedic performer now? Mm-hmm. Because like if you're attached to social media and all this stuff, you know, Twitter is a comedic performer's worst nightmare because you have to Nadia Comaneci.
Oh, I
every
love
tweet.
It. I love
it's
it.
It's like, I have 100. I use it all the time, too.
You
I like
to
it, but
10.
I'm like, I have 140 characters here to type this in, but the bit deserves 280.
Yeah.
You know,
but,
so you're condensing it. And
you know what? When you spell the word about ABT,
right.
Like those,
right.
Those, like literally, right. I don't have room for that. Oh,
right, right. What?
That's a whole different conversation.
But it's attention span. Like people want it like this, you know, quickly. And so I don't know how.
Have you guys found your pacing changing as you've, I mean, I don't know, Rachel, you're a puppy, but Bob, you're almost my age. Have you aged?
I will slow, like, but when I go to like, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, like maybe 3 weeks ago, and I'm in a club and there's 500 people and my pacing's bum, 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 bum. And then, you know, you come into a theater someplace in New Hampshire or Maine, and it's a little bit slower because, you know, they're not all sitting there inebriated. And eating nachos and wanting, you know, I mean, it's a different pace.
I mean,
each venue is different.
I've been doing comedy for 20 plus years. Yeah, I've been doing it. I'm almost 40. And, ouch.
you're going to get no sympathy here. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I'm almost 50 minus two. You have to read the room. That's called reading the room. And so sometimes when you realize, like, wait, I'm just going too fast. These are good, you know, this is good stuff, but they're just not getting it because I have to let it breathe and let it hit them. And that's the stuff I love about performing is that it's not just, even if you're doing the same jokes, it's not the same room. So it's always a different energy.
David, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments, jokes, and questions.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Bangor Savings Bank, serving Maine for 160 years with 56 locations and 700 employees. Bangor Savings Bank, you matter more. And Silly's in Portland's East End, open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends with vegan and gluten-free options. Silly's.com.
This is Terry Gross. As a listener to MPBN, you decide what MPBN is worth to you and at what level you can support it. But it's important to decide before this Thursday. Other stations all across the country will be raising money with 5, 7, and even 10-day pledge drives. But guess what? MPBN is going to trust that its listeners will do it in one day. This kind of pledge drive only works if you call or pledge online this Thursday during the MPBN Super Thursday one-day drive. Thank you.
And that's Super Thursday this Thursday, April 3rd.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Just What is Funny? Joining me in the studio, Rachel Flehinger, who is an improv comedian and morning show personality on country music station WPOR, and Bob Marley, who is a Maine comedian who has appeared on The David Letterman Show, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and on Comedy Central. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go back to the phones, I want to ask you each, who is your favorite comedian, Rachel?
Carol Burnett.
Really?
Yeah.
And you have the red hair.
And I have the red hair. Yeah. I was always like, I came from sketch, from acting originally, and then I moved into sketch, then I moved into improv. And I was always so crazy in sketches that improv people came and they were like, you've got to do what we do. You have no boundaries.
I used to love Tim Conway on that show, Harvey Korman. God. Those guys were great.
Yes.
But my favorite is Don Rickles.
Really?
I love him. You know what I love about him? He's a sweetheart. It's all wink, wink, nod, nod. And he's just hilarious. You know, it's cutting, but it's great. It's funny. And everybody's kind of in on the joke with him, you know?
Right. I gotcha. I got you. That's not what I would have thought you'd say, though, Bob. That's interesting.
I mean, I have a lot of favorites. I mean, right, I love Louis C.K. right now. Yeah. A friend of mine, Bill Burr, is really great. It's B-U-R-R. He's great. Of course, Seinfeld's great. Seinfeld is like the Eric Clapton of comedy. He's so technically proficient.
Yeah. Really?
There's no fat in the joke. Every single word is taken out. If you were going to look at a perfect comedian, it would be him.
The tweet of jokes.
Yeah. I mean, like, do I laugh at him like I do Chris Farley? No, but I respect him so much because he's so perfect on stage. You know? But Rickles, I love.
That's great. Going to Evan in South Portland. Hi, Evan.
Hi. I hope it isn't beneath you to hear a knock knock joke.
But
you're kind of sparse on clean jokes, it sounds like.
Let's hear it.
All right, so knock knock.
Who's there?
Control freak. Now you say control freak who?
That's good.
That is a good one. Thanks, Evan, for calling.
I have a lot of people I need to tell that joke to.
That's right.
And you guys don't even need to write it down. I would need to be writing it down. Thanks,
control
Evan.
Freak.
Got it. Carl, go ahead. Carl in Lisbon.
Hi. I was listening and heard Bob say that he had a difficult time telling clean jokes. And I just want to say that I got invited to a party one time that he rented Shawnee Peak for the whole day and invited all his friends to come and ski for free, and then he put on a show at the end of the day. And we had children with us. My wife was ready to put her hands over my 6-year-old daughter's ears any second. And he spoke for a whole hour, and all of the children and all of the adults laughed very hard, and he kept it so clean. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's good at the family gigs.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I've been doing it long enough, so I can do it now.
Yeah.
10 years ago, no, I couldn't. I couldn't do it 10 years ago. And 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I was working anywhere and everywhere. So it was a survival technique, you know, a little more foul-mouthed and all that type of stuff. One of the worst gigs I ever had, a guy hired me to go to Bath and do a show for his grandmother. He goes, she's going to love it. She's turning 89. It's a surprise party. She's going to come down the driveway. We're all going to be hiding in the woods in the driveway. You're going to jump out with a microphone and you're going to go, surprise. So, and I go, okay, sounds good. I need the $50. So she comes around the corner, drives in. I jump out. I go, surprise, because he pushed me. He goes, now. And she, instead of hitting the brake, hit the gas and hit me in the leg. And I went down because, I mean, think about it. She's 89. I'm a lunatic jumping out of the woods.
I can't believe you didn't kill her.
With
a
microphone. She's like, is that a gun? I don't know what that is.
Right.
She hit me
I'm
with
glad
her.
You're still here.
She hit me with her car. And I was like, I got to go. And he goes, here's the $50. I was like, okay. But back in the day, you work where you can work. And sometimes it's a survival thing to be a little more blue, you know. But
for me, I just did an improv show for a 60th birthday, and we wanted to be clean, and these people in their 60s, they were like, tell them the story about the time you got naked. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, all right, we tried.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for calling. We're going to go to Matt in Portland. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
Rachel, Bob, Jennifer, thank you. If you would have this segment like every week, I swear I would triple my pledges to MPBS.
Ooh, I wonder if my boss is listening. Good idea.
But what I'm calling, my wife and I are actually flying to Israel to have Passover soon. I love the Jewish jokes. And we're getting ready. We're going to Jerusalem, you know, the holy place, and we're, you know, repeating the Passover story that we all know.
Great for you.
God spared the Hebrews from the angel of death. And so my wife and I are going over it, and the kids are going over it. And the other night I looked at my wife and I said, do you mind if I want to put a different twist on this story? And of course, don't mess around with tradition, you know, that people get upset. I said, honey, we can kind of do like a main twist, you know, like
God allowed the winter to pass. None of us died.
This is what my mom ended up doing, because I would always bring so many people in that were like, what is this Passover? What is this thing? And I would say, well, come, we'll feed you. So this is what my mom did. All right. It's a Jewish drinking game. We're going to give you throughout this meal 4 glasses of wine. Finish. Don't fall over. You won. Right. And I'm going to feed you at the end. Right. That was basically how she told the story.
So, Rachel, it sounds like your mom was pretty funny.
My mom was amazing, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Were you as a kid at the dinner table trying to make each other laugh?
We had a lot of fun, yeah.
Did
you know, we just, there's nobody who can make you laugh like your family, because you sort of come from the same sort of thing. And I grew up with, my mom was a Renaissance person, so, you know, we would do science things at the table after we ate, and then we'd go and my mom played concert piano, we'd sing, and then we'd just sit and talk and laugh. And yeah, I grew up with that thing, and I think that's where it sort of...
So now I'm feeling like a failure as a parent, but
no, but that's, I know, but this is what I tell about my mom, because she passed away. I can fail at everything now.
Yeah.
I will never be my mother.
Okay, Baba, what about your family, you're growing
up?
We
had a different, we were Irish Catholic, guilt, just, you know... distributor takers. It was, I mean, my mother's got a great sense of humor. My dad did too, but they were strict. You know, we would be at the dinner table, the converse of your situation, and like try not to laugh, and like snot bubbles would be shooting out of your nose. And my dad would just look at you and go, keep it up, Bob. You're going to find out what it is. Like, he would give us cryptic threats. He's like, go to bed right now or you're going to find out what it is. I'm like, I don't even know what that means.
Did you ever find out?
No. He would say things like, Bob, brush your teeth before I knock them out of your head. I'm like, okay, no problem. I mean, he was kidding, but we didn't know that when you're 9.
Right.
You know, he's 6'3", weighs 360.
And I have the cavities, so maybe you win. I don't know.
Yeah.
Frederick in Portland. Frederick, go ahead.
Well, finally, you know, I'm hiding here in the sun at the East End porta potties at Eastern Beach in the sun. I'm glad you finally answered my call. I need to move away from where I am.
Yeah, move away from the potties, Frederick.
It's the only warm spot. It's the only bit of warm wind here at the East End.
Oh, you're sheltering from the wind.
Oh, gosh. If I had known, I would have skipped the other calls and come to you earlier.
No. I'm glad.
He's holed up.
I'm glad my call's been answered.
What's going on?
Hey, you know, don't we love Indian food? I love Indian food.
Yes.
And whenever I find a new Indian person in my life, I have to remind them that I've just learned a new Hindi word.
What's that?
And they say, well, what is that? And I say, holy cow.
Oh, because cows are holy in the Hindu religion.
You know what I love about his delivery is he novocaine that into conversation, and none of us even got it.
We're like
this guy was so good. That was so smooth.
You know what? We were all shell-shocked from the potty talk.
Right. And then he segued right into the joke, and I was like, I didn't even see that coming.
Frederick, thank you, and go warm up somewhere, okay?
Yeah.
It's going to be warmer this week. Bob told us at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Thanks.
46.
So depressing.
46. Woo!
Yeah.
Going to Al in Orono. Hi, Al. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. It's April Fool's Day, so I thought I'd relate a little practical joke that our office played on our boss a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wholesale sales office, and our boss normally keeps the door to his office open so that he can take part in the conversations in the outer office. And so in doing that, he takes the back of his door and pushes it against the wall. So what we did was we took a Playmate calendar girl, put it on the back of his door, and normally it's open, so it's against the wall. Well, the district manager of one of our larger clients came in for a conference.
Uh-oh.
And so he escorts the guy into his office, sits down to his desk, and shuts the door. So he's sitting there looking over this client's shoulder at a Playmate. And he's trying to keep his composure, and he's thinking, how in the world am I going to get him out of here without him seeing that? And so he's puzzled by this. And what he does, he's pretty clever about it. He says, here's a document, a sales proposal. Why don't you study this, and I'll put it on my desk. So the guy leans forward and looks at it. And so my boss gets up and casually walks around, takes the door, and he says, I'm going to get another piece of paper from the office. So he shuts, he opens the door and pushes the Playmate against the wall. And you know, the client never knew any what was going on, but we're out in the office just guffawing and thinking this is the greatest thing. And he was so mad when he came out of that office that we kept our jobs.
You did? I was going to ask.
That's the problem with practical jokes, though. The person who's the victim has to have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He did. He played it back on us several times.
It depends how funny you want it to be. It's even funnier if the person doesn't have a sense of humor, and then you have people. That's the laugh
audience,
at.
Yes. Right.
I have a podcast, and I recently had Fallon O'Reilly in, who's a local comedian. He had
a great
story, and I'll repeat it. Maybe I won't do it justice, but he was in trouble in school, and his dad had to go to the principal's office, and he said before going in, he goes, "Dad, now, the principal was in World War II, and he has very hard hearing, so you're going to have to yell." And before he went in, he said to the principal, "My dad was in World War II. He has very hard hearing, so you're going to have to yell."
So they were just
he said that they were both yelling at each other. And which I thought it was the greatest practical joke I've heard. And anyway, his name's Fallon O'Reilly. He's a local guy. And
that's great because he was going to the principal's office because
yes.
he clearly already been a little stinker and gotten into trouble.
That was the best practical joke I've heard lately.
That's a good one. I like that. We're going to go to Todd in Presque Isle. I don't think it's going to be 46 in Presque Isle tomorrow, is it, Todd?
I doubt it. It's pretty, we got snow up here, though, if you haven't heard.
Yep.
I was wondering if you heard that a cannibal got home late for dinner one night, so his wife gave him a cold shoulder.
Oh. And now on that note, Todd, I need to go to the next caller because I think there's another cannibal joke coming. So thanks for calling. Arthur, is it true? Do you also have a cannibal joke?
Yeah, is this for me?
Yeah.
It broke up when you said my name, so I didn't hear it. Yes, I do, but I want to let you know, I live in New Hampshire, but my heart is in Maine.
Oh, thanks.
I go up to Sedgwick and Sargentville and Deer Isle, and when I get there, it's like time goes back to like 1950 or 60.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is listening to CB Talk Friday and Saturday nights. You know, there's some humor there that's just incredible.
Yeah, it makes you want to tell a cannibal joke, doesn't it?
I didn't know there's still CB radios. Okay, go ahead, Arthur.
Oh, there are, yeah. Oh, but you got to get to you go up to Sargentville. The first joke is, did you hear about the cannibal that passed his brother in the woods?
No.
No.
You didn't
get
that.
I got it. It took me a minute. Another poop joke.
Oh.
Yes.
It hurts her. Look, Chad,
yes.
Are you okay?
Good. That was a great.
Okay, you've got another one, Arthur. I don't know if I can take it.
There's two cannibals. They're walking in the woods, and they come up this clown. He's dead. And they look, and they go, "Geez, it's lunchtime." So they start eating, you know. And then the other one looks at the other cannibal and says, "Do you taste something funny?"
Okay.
So thank you, Arthur, for expanding on a theme today. I appreciate it.
I will say this. As a comedian, that is one of the biggest curses. When people walk up to you and they find out you're a comedian.
Tell me a joke.
And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
My whole life is going to be judged by this person right here, right now. And they want a bum joke.
Right.
Not, okay, I'll tell you a 12-minute bit.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, it's not going
to
work.
But it makes me want to fail badly. Like, it makes me want to tell a joke that is so bad that they learn their lesson.
Right.
But they're like, I'm never going to ask anybody. If Bob Marley can't tell me a joke right on the spot, I might as well quit.
Just tell him a classic knock-knock joke. We have Christine has written a long email, but she's being philosophical here. You guys are going to have to put your thinking caps on.
Okay.
I've always wondered why it's automatically funny when a man puts on a dress. It isn't funny when a woman wears pants. Why is it funny when a man dresses as a woman?
Oh.
Because men are so bad at it. When women wear pants, they look good. When a man wears a dress, he looks horrible. Like he's got chest hair sticking out. You know?
I saw a man over at Morrill's Corner last week by the walk-in, which just closed, which is amazing to me because it was the best food ever. And this man had a dress and a wig and a full beard. And I was like, wow, there's no attempt.
Yeah.
It's a lazy transvestite.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about people who are transvestites, transgender. Like, you know, there are people. That's not what I'm talking about. I feel like she's asking for comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
Right.
And because it's a visual. I mean, it's actually.
It's funny.
But when women try to do like crazy drag, they can make it look funny. But you're right. I mean, it's kind of sexist.
Yeah.
Comedy's been sexist for a really long time.
It has.
Well, there are certain things that are always funny. My daughter said famously when she was about 3 years old, farts are funny.
Farts are always funny. Right.
A man, a big hairy guy dressing as a woman is always funny.
Always
are there
funny.
Some other things that fill this category? I mean, we've had a...
Yeah, I mean, poop can be, you know, like, you know, there are, yeah.
There's always, I mean, that stuff is just stuff. But everyday general life is fun. Like, I find life in Maine, a lot of things are just things that we do here are, like, we have family gatherings around Christmas time. And, you know, there's always the orange electric cord running into the garage to, you know, stoke up the crock pot. I'm like, can we get another device? This is ridiculous.
I love my crock pot, Bob.
Right. So there's that.
Too.
And then there's the State of Maine holiday platter where the Triscuits, the Wheat Thins, and the Cracker Barrel cheese.
Oh, yeah, guy.
And somebody's always like, well, you had a good year. Cracker Barrel.
On that note, we have to say goodbye and thank you. Rachel Flahinger, an improv comedian and morning show personality on country music station WPOR. Bob Marley, a comedian who's appeared on The David Letterman Show and many other national programs. Today's program was produced by our volunteer Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Cindy answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We also had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/mainecalling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about his passion for yodeling and why he believes drums are the most important musical instrument. Or he might talk about dairy farming in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.